Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Peter King. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Cyprus hours after a West Bank meeting with Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas. Here's the BBC's Lise Doucette.
The spokesperson for the Palestinian president said Mr. Abbas told Mr. Blinken there must be an immediate ceasefire and more humanitarian aid be allowed into the Gaza Strip.
Israel says that won't happen with Hamas using civilians as human shields. White House Deputy Secretary Deputy Security Advisor John Feiner tells Face the Nation that practice is unconscionable.
At the same time, while that raises the burden on the Israeli military to conduct this fight and go after Hamas, it does not diminish their obligation to do so in a way that distinguishes between civilians and fighters. And we have had many direct conversations with the government of Israel on that topic, and we'll continue to do that.
As for Americans still stuck in the region,
intensive negotiations with all sides relevant to this conflict, we have been able to get out more than 300 Americans, lawful permanent residents, and their family members. This is obviously a major priority and one that we are going to continue to work at until every American who wants to leave is able to do so.
A four-hour window for Palestinians to head south was expected to close about 2 hours ago, with the Israeli army clearing a direct route to safer ground. The BBC's Mark Lowen is in Jerusalem.
The UN has said now that 1.5 million people have been displaced. The worry at the moment is that some 400,000 civilians remain in northern Gaza, despite Israel's call for them to move south. The fear is if they do begin to move south, then the humanitarian needs there in the south of Gaza will only intensify.
The long standoff that shut down Hamburg, Germany's airport, is just ended. Police saying an armed man is given up without incident. They say a child with him is fine. The man they arrested crashed through a security gate last night, parked under a plane. Police believe this is all about a custody battle. Auto workers have tentative deals with the big three automakers. Now union president Sean Fain says non-union shops like Tesla and Toyota are next on his list.
Our goal is to spend the next few years organizing auto workers across this country. The big three aren't the only auto companies making record profits.
When is water bad for fighting fires? CBS's Matt Piper with answers.
The National Park Service says local water cannot be used to fight a wildfire in a marsh in Louisiana because it's just too salty. Severe drought and low river flow has led to a saltwater intrusion in the Mississippi River that's made local water as salty as it is during a hurricane storm surge. Using it would risk killing plants and animals, poisoning the marsh's soil for the future.
This is CBS News.
You don't need a job platform, you need a hiring partner. Indeed lets you schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credit.
A lot of schools
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The holidays will be here before you know it. People who support animal-friendly diets would like you to consider vegan meals for your big gatherings. Here's more from Mike Moan.
For holidays like Thanksgiving, turkey is still the staple. Mary Telfer with the Wisconsin-based organization Alliance for Animals says they urge everyone to avoid eating meat this holiday season due to animal treatment concerns, human health, and environmental impacts from food production. For people on the fence about making the switch, she says you can lean into vegan options.
And they think, how can I do this and still please my family? How can I do this and still keep up our traditions? I mean, yeah, try some different things.
She says you can sample vegan food before the holidays, noting there are now countless websites and cookbooks with recipes. And Telfer says if you feel like you need to serve meat to your guests, you can offset the impact by using sides like non-dairy whipped cream. And staples like mashed potatoes and cranberries can still complement the meal. And if you're worried about missing out on protein, Telfer recommends you load up on protein-rich vegetables such as peas. As for considering a vegan holiday meal, she feels it shouldn't be as controversial as some might think.
We don't think it's strange when we welcome progress, when it comes in the form of technology or the newest phone or laptop, and yet we have a harder time embracing progress in how we think about our non-human animal friends.
Beyond the treatment of animals, she says industrialized food production creates land use issues for future generations, threatens wildlife habitat, while adding to pollution woes that harm human health. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And you're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us. This is Civic Media. It's What's on Tap for the Chippewa Valley, 93.5.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A mostly cloudy sky, a light south to southeast wind up to 15. Could see some mid to late afternoon sprinkles moving in, otherwise 53 degrees. For your Sunday night, sprinkles and some light rain around, steady temperatures in the lower 50s and staying breezy. It's 39 at our studios.
You're tapped in to the issues affecting the Valley and all of Wisconsin.
Consider us the bartenders of friendly local talk.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. It is Saturday, November 4th, 2023. My name is Jim Santel, and yes, this is Morning Cannolis. Thank you for joining me on our Saturday morning broadcast. This is the 70th broadcast, the 70th time we have been on the air through the wonderful auspices of Civic Media, coming to you through a variety of stations around the great state of Wisconsin. And that includes WMDX in Madison, WXCO in Wausau, WAUK in Waukesha, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, WRCE in Richland Center, WLAK in Amory, WISS in Oshkosh, WGBW in Green Bay, WBZH in Haywood, WRJN in Racine, WLCX in La Crosse, and The Tap in Eau Claire 93.5. Welcome to all of you and more, even outside of the state of Wisconsin, who are joining us this morning on Morning Cannolis. This is our weekly review, our analysis, our discussion of those most important news stories, those events in our lives, in the areas of law and government, and the great aspiration, the continuing aspiration always, for justice in America. As always, I'm supported and assisted this morning by my extraordinary producer, Anya, and together we're delighted and honored to have you with us for our examination and analysis of those issues that are important to you, to all of us in Wisconsin, and everyone in our nation as well. Every single broadcast, we ask and attempt to answer as best we can three important questions. We ask, what happened? What do we know? What are the facts of a particular case, an event, a circumstance? What is out there for us to digest and consume? Second, why is it important? Why is it relevant? Why is it material? Why is it significant? One of my friends said, it's a way of saying, why do we care? Why should we care? And the answer is, yes, it is important to talk about these important things. And then third, what do we do about it? If there are things that we can do in a remedial fashion, what should we be thinking and pondering about in terms of our activities, our responses, and our answers? Again, what happened? Why are these things important? And what should we do if we can do something in response to them? Let's talk this morning about what is always, of course, our aggressive, but I believe our achievable agenda, hopefully informative to you and to your family and friends, and maybe even inspiring as we talk about these major issues in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in our nation. We can talk about the syllabus a bit this morning before we launch into that. I'll initiate this morning a new segment called Deterrence Corner. And although it may sound a little bit lighthearted, in fact, it's not. We're going to talk in context of three, maybe even four different cases, four different criminal prosecutions of just this past week and before, that underscore what we have talked a lot about on this broadcast, which is deterrence, both individual specific deterrence as to people engaging in conduct that is violative of our laws, violative of our basic social norms and the way we get along, and then also general deterrence. We're going to talk about something that happened on Cornell's campus just this past week. We're talking about a Memphis police officer pleading guilty in the death, the beating death of Tyree Nichols. We're going to talk, of course, about the conviction just on Thursday of Sam Bankman-Fried. And we're going to also talk about a Princeton student who was recently charged with storming the Capitol as a part of the insurrection on January 6th. All of that a part of our deterrence review, our analysis this morning. Then, we could not get through the week. We could not get through these broadcasts the next hour and the following hour without talking about what's going on right now in a court in New York. That is the prosecution, the civil prosecution brought by Letitia James, who is the Attorney General of the state of New York, against Donald Trump, his two sons, other members of the Trump Organization, and the Trump Organization itself, alleging fraud, alleging violations of New York state law in connection with valuations of property and variations on those valuations, depending upon what reporting was done, all of that in violation of obligations under the law in the state of New York. I'm going to talk about the testimony that continued this past week and continues again next week. Some significant testimony from the Trumps themselves, and we'll talk about the implications of that with respect to any future criminal case that might also evolve and devolve from that. Then we're going to turn back, as we have talked before, to the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution, some major events and circumstances, some major goings-on in the trial courts of America just this past week, one of them in Colorado, one of them in Minnesota, all of them focusing on the issue of whether or not the former president, Donald Trump, should be on the ballot in those states, arguably other places around our nation, as he proceeds with his campaign for the presidency in 2023 and 2024 in particular. That amendment, as we'll discuss again, prohibiting individuals who have taken an oath of office to the federal government from running again if, in fact, they engaged in an insurrectionist-type activity during the course of their recent lives. We'll talk about what that means and what the courts are doing in that connection as well. That segues nicely and completely into our discussion about what's going on in one of the federal cases, the criminal cases pending against Donald Trump. This one in the courtroom of Tanya Chutkan, the U.S. District Court judge in the District of Columbia, who just this past week had more to say about the so-called order, the gag order, a phrase, once again, I'm not especially attracted to, but an order that requires that the defendant, Donald Trump, and frankly, all other defendants, comply with basic rules and regulations about how we treat witnesses, how we treat potential jurors, how we treat the parties involved in litigation. Major order there, an appellate action also by the attorneys representing the former president. We're going to talk also about how the ACLU not only weighed in on that, perhaps not surprisingly, in connection with that request under the First Amendment. And then also, again, another good segment into another issue, the ACLU asking the United States Supreme Court just this past week, not in on the docket, to talk about gender care and provisions that are restricting that in states around the nation. We'll talk more about what that means and the ACLU's petition to the United States Supreme Court just this past week. And that finally leads us into what will certainly be our second hour this morning, and that is talking, as we always do, about the United States Supreme Court. Major cases this week having to do with asset forfeiture and social media, the big cases in the middle of the week, and then also trademark, all of those, the subjects of oral argument before the nine justices just this past week. Next week, three more cases, one involving the Fair Credit Reporting Act, one involving veterans' benefits, and the big one coming up on the 7th, is this case of Rahimi, which we talked about last week. That is raising the issue of whether or not someone who is subject to the restrictions, the limitations of a domestic violence restraining order, should in fact be able to possess a weapon in our nation. Currently prohibited by federal law, the United States Supreme Court determining whether or not that law is constitutional under the Second Amendment. We've got a lot on our agenda this morning, but again, we can achieve it. We can be with you this hour and next hour, both Anya and me, talking with you about all of these important issues in our lives, justice, and the aspiration for it in America. Let's begin with Deterrence Corner this morning. Four very serious cases, all of them, once again, underscoring The importance of deterrence, both specific and general, we'll get back to that and its specific definition in just a moment. Just this past week, a junior at Cornell University in New York, 21-year-old named Patrick Dai, D-A-I, was arrested and charged federally in connection with an horrific series of online posts over the previous weekend in which Mr. Dai threatened to kill and harm Cornell's Jewish students. That according to the prosecutors in New York who brought him into court. He appeared this past week in court. He did not enter a plea, interestingly, but remanded back into the custody of the U.S. Marshals. He remains in custody to this day. Defense attorney declining to comment after the hearing. But what's happening here? What's going to happen down the road? Significantly, just yesterday, Friday, because of this horrific event and other concerns on campus, the leadership of Cornell University observed Friday as a community day in recognition of the extraordinary stress of the past few weeks. That according to a university spokesman telling major news outlets. The university is going to resume classes on Monday, but along the way, this plainly has shaken once again not only a major university on our campus, but is symptomatic, illustrative of what is regrettably, horrifically going on around the country, on campuses, but also beyond. Since the conflict in the Middle East began on October 7th, ignited last month, Jews, Palestinians, Muslims in the U.S. have been expressing legitimately some growing fear over the reported spike in hate-motivated attacks. Among other things, the Anti-Defamation League reports that there's been a nearly 400% increase in anti-Semitic behaviors incidents just over this period of same time of last year, a 400% increase in that. The threats against Cornell's students prompted, of course, the state and campus police to bolster their presence on the campus. About 22% of the student population of Cornell is Jewish. And a leader, an administrator at the university said this, "While we take some measure of relief and knowing that the alleged author of these vile anti-Semitic posts that threatened our Jewish community is in custody, it was still disturbing to learn that he was a Cornell student. Indeed, his behavior, not only contemptible, that is an understatement of dramatic proportion. He was accused, and again, we hasten to add that he is still the presumption of innocence attends him. He's accused of publishing posts which he threatened to kill and injure Jewish people on campus, and as he said, shoot up the university's predominantly kosher dining hall. In one post, the defendant wrote that he would bring an assault rifle to campus and shoot Jewish people. The posts were written under certain usernames referencing Hamas, and they used unmistakably anti-Israel and pro-Palestinian slogans, all of this coming out of the criminal complaint that was issued again by a magistrate judge upon the information provided by a federal officer. All of that is the process by which this particular defendant brought into custody, remains in custody to this day. The investigator is able to track him down by using IP addresses connected to at least two of those posts and to narrow him down as a suspect, traced to various locations in Pittsburgh, Ithaca, New York. And according to the affidavit, Dai himself is from Pittsburgh and attended the Pittsburgh Mendon High School. In an interview with the New York Post, Dai's parents said that he has had severe depression dating back to 2021. Dai's father, who did not want his name to be used, told media outlets in a text exchange that his son had stopped responding to the parents' calls and texts in recent days, causing them great concern. The prosecutors, appropriately, under a circumstance like this, the threats of dramatic proportion.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
over and over and over and over and over, then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
Welcome back. This is Morning Cannolis. It is Saturday, November 4th, 2023, our 70th broadcast here on Civic Media. Thank you once again for joining my producer, Anya, and me for our broadcast. We are talking at the early stages of our first hour on this broadcast morning, all about deterrence, chatting right before the break about the Cornell student now prosecuted by federal authorities for his making these horrific threats on the campus. Arguably beyond that, he is in custody today and sending this message to the entire world that that kind of anti-Semitic conduct, those threats to anyone, cannot be a part of our national experience. Discussion, dispute, disagreement, that's what we are all about. But we do not take this into our own hands. We do not threaten people with the kinds of horrific behaviors that he threatened. We move on to another story, also from just this past week, similarly focusing on deterrence, this in a slightly different area, but also sending the important message to stop those specific people who engage in this kind of conduct, in this situation, police misconduct, and also sending a larger message to all of our law enforcement authorities, our responsible public servants, about the way that we expect them to behave when it comes to interactions with people of all immutable characteristics, including race. We know that back in January 7th of this year, an horrific thing happened in Memphis. We know as well that at that time, the victim in that case, a fellow named Tyree Nichols, you recall him well, was pulled over by Memphis police officers on the evening of January 7th and pulled from his car by those officers who forced him to the ground. Unclear exactly the basis for their reasonable suspicion to stop him in the first place, which is going to be a part of this continuing prosecution. They forced him to the ground, pulled him out of the car, shouted multiple conflicting commands as they held him down there on the ground. He struggled with them. And while he was being held down and pepper sprayed, Tyree Nichols, again the victim in this case, did enable himself to get away from the police officers. He struggled, he jumped up, he ran away and began running toward his mother's home in that area. He was caught. He was caught by those police officers and ultimately once again tackled. And the other officers, all of them doing this about 100 yards from his very home that he was going to. The following minutes, what happens, we know this story well. It is horrific. The officers punched him, they kicked him, they pepper sprayed him, and they hit him with a baton. And at some point, he was also held up against his arms while being hit by the officers. The officers eventually leaned against him, and some unmarked police cruiser was there, and medical personnel ultimately arrived on the scene while this horrific event was happening, this horrific beating was happening, taken to a local hospital where ultimately he dies from blunt force trauma to his head. It is an unmistakable incident of police, not only misconduct, but also criminal conduct in violation not only of Tyree Nichols' civil rights to be alive, but also in violation of the federal law, state law as well. This is a murder that finds its way into federal and state courts as well. So what happened just this past week? Well, we know in the wake of that, there were five different officers who were federally charged in the U.S. District Court there with excessive force, understandably, deliberate indifference, conspiracy to witness tamper, also some activities after this event happened to try to compromise the legitimacy of the information, obstruction of justice, all of that happening, charged in the federal system in early September. On the state level, again, another case where both state and federal prosecutions go forward. The five officers were charged with second-degree murder, appropriately. That's what this is. Aggravated assault as well, official oppression two counts of aggravated kidnapping for what they did, even in those few moments, and two counts of official misconduct, all of that coming out of the state system. What happens in this particular case is one of the defendants, his name, Desmond Mills Jr., he's one of the five police officers. Just this past week, he pleads guilty to excessive force and conspiracy to witness tamper in federal court. In other words, one of the events coming out of the attack on Tyre Nichols, and then this obstruction of justice component as well, attempting to tamper with the evidence that would have been brought into court against him. In state court, likewise, he pleaded guilty to a great variety of charges also related to Tyre Nichols' death. According to the DA at that time, both the federal and state prosecutors have this as a part of the package that results in the Mills pleading guilty, the Mills officer pleading guilty, and the disposition of this singular case among the five of them. The government authorities, state and federal both, are going to be recommending a sentence of 15 years imprisonment. And those sentences, the state and federal sentences, are going to be served concurrently, again, assuming that the judge in the case adopts the recommendation of the state and federal prosecutors. Concurrently, of course, meetings, they run together. They're not consecutive. 15 years will be 15 years. The judge in the case has sentencing discretion, however, and plainly could look at this and could sentence Miles, again, the officer pleading guilty, to life in prison plus 20 years. And that alone, that statutory capacity that the judge has to imprison someone underscores the wild, excessive, completely, again, illegal and violative of fundamental human rights conduct that this was. That arrangement comes just under 2 months after the indictments here, including of Officer Desmond Wills in federal court, and also about 10 months after he was indicted at the state levels. Significantly, as we have seen in other matters, one of which we will chat about in a little bit greater detail in this broadcast and in future broadcasts as well, they may well call on Mills for information not only about what happened there, although I suspect the law enforcement investigators have a pretty good sense of exactly what happened at the time of this murder, this civil rights violation in Memphis. And while they said they were not certain, they didn't explicitly say they're going to call him as a witness, certainly part of the arrangement here, the plea agreement, is that Mr. Mills will agree to cooperate and will testify against the remaining four. And that practice, that protocol, if you will, we have seen in other cases as well. We don't know for sure, but highly likely that because of Mills coming forward, pleading guilty, the first of the five, highly likely that some of the others will also then similarly come forward and plead guilty to some package, some arrangement, both in the state and federal courts. Again, all of the defendants, remaining defendants, have the right to go to trial. They are likewise presumed innocent until proven guilty. But we will see as this plays out an horrific event. Tyre Nichols is dead. And there does need to be not only deterrence as to these five, including the individual who's pleading guilty this past week, but also the other four as well. And again, here is the larger concern and even the greater message to all of America, and that is police officers are not authorized to engage in this kind of behavior. It is not a part of official training. I know that from my time as U.S. attorney, in my time as an assistant U.S. attorney. Spent a lot of time working with local and state and certainly federal law enforcement talking about the uses of force. And yes, under the Constitution, you can use force. You cannot use excessive force. It always has to be commensurate with the kind of behavior that you're confronting. That's a part of the lesson here. That's a part of the deterrence lesson as well to all other officers who are out there. When we come back, we're going to talk more about this particular case and the response of the family that has also brought a civil lawsuit here. Stay with us for that important conversation coming up right after this.
Tap into what Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the Chippewa Valley is talking about today. This is 93.5 The Tap. Online at thetap.fm.
CBS News Brief. The thousands of civilian casualties in Gaza are a big concern for the U.S. Deputy National Security Advisor John Finer on Face the Nation.
The devastating toll that this has taken on civilians is one that deeply concerns us, one that we raise in a very direct way, both publicly, as Secretary Blinken has done, as others have done, and privately and directly with the government of Israel.
Election Day is exactly a year away. CBS News poll shows President Biden in trouble. Deputy Surveys Director Jennifer DePinto.
73% of Americans say things in the country are going badly, a high for the year. And in a potential 2024 matchup with Donald Trump, Biden trails by 3 points. Trump has some key advantages. More voters think they'd be better off financially if he wins, and more think he could keep the U.S. out of a war overseas.
And as Mr. Biden runs for re-election, tens of thousands of people are running in the New York City Marathon. CBS News Brief. I'm Peter King.
This is your local Civic Media radio station.
Want to hear even more? Anytime?
Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
The Bucks win a tournament game. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks are headed to Brooklyn to play the Nets tomorrow night, the tip-off time at 6:30. Friday night, the Bucks beat the Knicks 110-105 thanks to a key three-point shot in the fourth quarter by Milwaukee's Damian Lillard.
It just basically gave me the opportunity to come from behind Giannis's defender because he had the ball. So his man, instead of me going uphill where he can see the action coming, I went back door and then I came back uphill from behind the defender. So once I kind of turned the corner with the handoff, I knew he wouldn't be able to just jump it because I was coming from behind him.
That was the Bucks' first in-season tournament game, which basically means the games are played on a different flooring surface. There are trophies awarded. And most importantly, if your team wins a tournament, each player receives a $500,000 cash bonus. College football. Wisconsin Badgers now fall to 5-4 after losing in Indiana 20-14. Head coach Luke Fickell.
We got to find a way to do what we said we were going to do at the start of the year. Is finish.
With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A mostly cloudy sky, a light south to southeast wind up to 15. Could see some mid to late afternoon sprinkles moving in, otherwise 53 degrees. For your Sunday night, sprinkles and some light rain around, steady temperatures in the lower 50s, and staying breezy. Right now, it's 40.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
UPS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes, don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
This is 93.5 The Tap. If anyone knows what's on tap, It's the Chippewa Valley. We're talking about everything that's on tap in your world today. 93.5, The Tap.
You can never know what it's like. Your blood like winter freezes just like ice. And there's a cold and lonely light that shines from you. You'll wind up like the wreck you hide behind that mask you use. And did you think this fool could never win? Well, look at me, I'm coming back again. I got a taste of love in a simple way. And if you need to know while I'm still standing, you just fade away. Don't you know?
Back again here on Morning Cannolis. Thank you for once again joining me on this Saturday, November 4th, 2023, talking all about deterrence this morning. A Cornell student prosecuted for his anti-Semitic posts online. The Memphis police officer now pleading guilty as a part of his involvement in the beating death, the horrific civil rights violations of Tyre Nichols in Memphis back in January. In connection with that, significantly, the family had also filed a civil lawsuit based upon the violation of their civil rights, the loss of life, which is a violation of civil rights under our Constitution, under state law as well. That civil case is still proceeding. And importantly, the Nichols family are saying that this plea deal will help to bring justice. That, as we know, is not always the case. There are circumstances certainly where families do not feel vindicated for the loss of their loved ones. Here you have a family that's coming forward and saying that they believe that this disposition as to one of the five officers is in fact in promotion, in aspiration, imperfect and incomplete aspiration. We cannot restore the life of Tyre Nichols, but nonetheless, in pursuit of justice, the attorney for the family said, "We stand strong in our belief that these officers, including Mills, acted at the direction of a policy, an official policy that only violated civil rights of innocent civilians, but which caused needless pain to many." That's what the civil lawsuit's about. And that is also what the criminal case is about. Deterrence individually, specifically, deterrence to other officers out there, deterrence to leaders in positions of law enforcement who are developing policies, doing training on force, the uses of it, when it's appropriate, when it is not appropriate, and what kinds of things the officers, both new, continuing, and long-tenured, need to know about what the Constitution prescribes to them when it comes to serving the people in their constituencies. And so again, that plea agreement, the first of perhaps several more to come. We will also monitor this story. It is a significant matter. We have seen this play out before in America. It is happening now in Memphis as at least one officer coming to grips individually with what he did, his involvement in this case, and presumably testifying in trial against the others should they elect to do just that. More deterrence stories coming out of our courts. This once again in federal court, one of the larger stories of just late this past week, and that is Sam Bankman-Fried found guilty by a trial jury in federal court, again in New York, on all counts at the fraud trial over this cryptocurrency exchange called FTX. Sam Bankman-Fried, as many of us know, you've seen this in the media as well, hailed as his genius, if you will, in cryptocurrency, was found guilty again by a jury deliberating for only 4 hours. After weeks and weeks of testimony, the jury comes back after about 4 hours of deliberation and finds him guilty in New York following their deliberations. Bankman-Fried, as you well know, the founder of the currency exchange called FTX, also involved in a conspiracy, but a currency exchange there called FTX, charged with 7 counts of wire fraud and security fraud and money laundering. The swindled customers of this digital currency exchange and lenders to this affiliated company. It's also a part of the trial, a lot of presentation there, of a hedge fund called Alameda Research. According to the U.S. attorney, the defendant here, again, in response to all of this, perpetrated one of the largest financial frauds in American history, that the U.S. attorney commenting on after the return of the verdict. The cryptocurrency industry, the U.S. attorney said, might be new, The players like Bankman-Fried also might be new, but this kind of fraud, this kind of corruption, this kind of conspiracy that involves him and others who also pled guilty, many of those co-conspirators in this effort not only pled guilty, but testified against him in this trial. These are his former colleagues inside FTX, came forward and testified. All of this, again, focused not so much on a very sophisticated FTX cryptocurrency fraud that is beyond the understanding of many of us, but rather on garden variety fraud, taking the money of investors and using it for your own purposes, your own personal uses of great varieties for your own personal benefit, taking those monies, probably also using them to chase after deficits that are identified as FTX continues to identify problems in its own management. All of that a part of these charges, securities fraud, this consortium of individuals, again, some of whom have pled guilty, and Bankman-Fried going to trial over a period of a number of weeks in New York, ultimately found guilty of these offense conduct behaviors in New York. What is this all about? Why are we talking about it once again? Again, it's a huge case, not only for the victims of his offense conduct, those people, again, some estimates of billions of dollars that was defrauded from many of these folks that invested in him, believing that he was this wunderkind who would, in fact, take their money and produce even more money. All of that, a part of this presentation by the U.S. Attorney's Office, by the Assistant U.S. Attorney over the period of the past several weeks, also in front of Judge Kaplan, who during the course of this trial, you may recall, had decided because of Sam Bankman-Fried's involvement with witnesses, his attempting to tamper with their testimony, to affect their testimony, we've talked about this a lot in other contexts, decided that while this trial was going on, Sam Bankman-Fried, the defendant himself, would actually be jailed, would be in prison. And he has been in prison since the early days of this trial because of his failure to follow the specific, simple directives that attend every single defendant in American court. Criminal prosecutors know this well. Criminal defense attorneys know this well. Court staff and judges know this well. And you do too. And that is, you cannot become involved in an obstruction of justice by tampering with witnesses, trying to affect the jury pool. Sam Bankman-Fried, in particular, reaching out to some of the, at that time, potential witnesses, attempting to make their testimony something other than what it was legitimately going to be. The judge finds out about it. Judge Kaplan finds out about it, warns him. And then eventually, when it continues, Judge Kaplan says, I've had enough, and imprisons Sam Bankman-Fried during the course of the trial. He remains in custody to this time. His trial now completed after this return of a jury verdict. And we know that what will happen next, of course, is that under our federal system, something called the U.S. Probation Office is going to conduct what's called a pre-sentence report. And they're going to meet with him. They're going to meet with victims of the fraud, put together a report for the judge on the impact of this, and also describe who he is, who the other players in this are, the people who testified, the others who joined with him in this effort to initially make some money, but gone bad ultimately. All of that put together in a pre-sentence report that is presented then to the judge at the time of the sentencing. And for all of this, Bankman-Fried now faces up to 110 years in prison. Sentencing is scheduled for March 28th. During now and that period of time, that's exactly when this pre-sentence report will be assembled. And the judge at that time will take a look at something called the sentencing guidelines, determine what kinds of sentence should be imposed based upon not only the background that Sam Bankman-Fried brings to this case, but also the horrific things that he did in defrauding these many, many people of many, many dollars. All that coming up again in March 28th. What is the point of this as well? Yes, again, it's inside deterrence. And indeed, all along the way, at the time that this case was initially charged, in fact, the U.S. attorney said, we are going to stop this particular defendant, Sam Bankman-Fried, from doing this more. And we're also sending messages beyond this particular prosecution to other people who might do the same thing. It was once estimated by Forbes that Bankman-Fried's stakes in the Alameda and FTX companies were worth about $26 billion, 29 years of life at the time. after this, the bankruptcies and other problems with the administration of these entities, all that money disappears and criminal charges follow after that. All of that discussed by the U.S. attorney, a fellow named Damon Williams. He's a U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York. He talks about all this in the wake of the return of the jury verdict just this past week. Again, Sam Bankman-Fried found guilty of all of these counts: wire fraud, conspiracy, two counts of wire fraud, one count of conspiracy to commit money laundering, one count of conspiracy to commit commodities fraud, one count of conspiracy to commit securities fraud as well. Again, the conspiracy aspect of that as well, this decision to join with other people in effecting a criminal end. What does Damian Williams say about those conduct pieces and the specific things for which the jury found him guilty? He said this: it's all about deterrence. It's a warning, the U.S. attorney said. This case, to every single fraudster out there who thinks that they're untouchable, or that their crimes are too complex for us to catch, or that they're simply too powerful for us to prosecute, or that they could try to talk their way out of it when they get caught. All those statements being made by the U.S. attorney, Damian Williams, those folks should think again. Those folks should think again. That's what the U.S. attorney's office and the U.S. attorney himself is saying, and that is all about deterrence. If there are other people out there, not only in the area of cryptocurrency, but also other people engaged in any kind of financial activity, whether it's at a bank, a savings loan, a credit union, a much more sophisticated securities operation, anything involving money, anything involving business generally, the message from the Sam Bankman-Fried trial and the likely sentence that he is going to get, entirely possible that Sam Bankman-Fried, by the way, is going to spend the rest of his life in prison, entirely possible as a result of this, all of that sending the message to those people who might think about doing the same thing, might think about defrauding the investors in their financial enterprise and bringing them, in many cases, to financial ruin, all of that to send the message that you will, as the U.S. Attorney's Office said, will not get away with it. You should think again. The fraud will be identified. You will not talk your way out of it, and you will be brought to justice, justice in a court, just as Sam Bankman-Fried was brought to justice this past week. Now, highly likely, he will appeal this prosecution, the result, the verdict in particular, rendered by the jury in this case. He has the right to do that. He plainly can go with what's called the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. That's the appellate court that includes New York and New York City in particular. It's entirely possible that that will happen. But we know that all of that will happen, if it does, only after the sentencing. And so that, once again, coming up in March, in late March. And we will here on this broadcast continue to monitor that story as well as a part of our continuing focus on deterrence in America. A final story also related to deterrence and the impacts not only upon the individual defendant, but also significantly upon other people. This one we have talked about before. We know that there are well in excess of 1,000 people, who have been the subjects, the targets, the defendants in investigations and prosecutions, plea agreements, sentencings in the federal court in Washington, D.C. for their involvement in storming the Capitol, the riot on January 6th, the insurrection that happened on January 6th. And so, just this past week, a 22-year-old New Jersey man was sentenced to 2 months in prison just this past week for taking part in the storming of the U.S. Capitol on January 6th by that mob that was loyal to the former president. When we come back, I'll tell you more about what happened to him and why this case also important in understanding deterrence in our criminal justice system.
93.5 The Tap.
RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group Wisconsin Breaking News today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. This is 93.5 The Tap.
It's a little bit funny, this feeling inside. I'm not one of those who can easily hide. I don't have much money, but boy, if I did, I'd buy a big house where we both could live. If I was a skeleton.
Welcome back. We are talking in this first hour all about deterrence in America, these criminal prosecutions at various stages in their litigation. Talking right now about a 22-year-old New Jersey man. A New Jersey man, his name is Larry Gilberson. He is a sophomore. He's a sophomore at Princeton. He's studying political science, and he was a part of this large group that stormed the Capitol on January 6th of 2021. Larry Gilberson pleading guilty in July to civil disorder. That's a felony. The prosecutor is charged with a felony and also several misdemeanors along the way. At the riot, according to the affidavit in support of the complaint against Mr. Gilberson. What do we know about this? We know that he cheered on others, at a minimum that, as they used weapons and pepper spray to attack other police officers who were there. They were guarding a tunnel at the time. And Mr. Gilberson, perhaps as a part of his political science attempt to use that on that day, attempted unsuccessfully to start a chant among the group, the rioters there, a chant of drag them out. Among other actions, drag them out. He's not successful in getting people to join him in that chant, but that is enough. That kind of thing is enough as a part of the prosecution of him to land him in prison, in federal prison for 2 months based upon what he did. All of that, once again, to send a message not only to Mr. Gilberson, who is now going to be presumably suspending his studies there at Princeton for a while. He will certainly be, as we say, on paper afterwards. He's obliged to respond to and be supervised by a U.S. probation officer for a period of years after he comes out of prison, deterring him from doing this again. And sure enough, Mr. Gilberson, at the time of the hearing, expresses, as do many of these defendants, remorse in court for what he called his careless and thoughtless actions. How many times have we seen these defendants come forward and say, yes, now I understand that I was arguably misled. Now I understand the inappropriate conduct in which I engaged. And now he says that he believed my defining moment is now standing before you. That's what he tells the judge when he was before the judge. And again, all this happening in front of Judge Carl Nichols, again, one of the many judges sentencing defendants in the U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C. Judge Nichols himself does not hold back. He calls the actions by Mr. Gilberson reprehensible and does say, as if you're thinking about this, and both Anya and I are thinking the same thing, the two-month sentence was something of a break. Judge Nichols admits that. He says that, I do believe that his expressions of remorse generally, and then again today, are candid and truthful, and that's important to me. And so he gets a break, if you will, based upon that admission that his behaviors were inappropriate. That recognition now, quite a bit too late, but nonetheless late, perhaps sincere in front of the judge. That warrants the judge looking at him and saying that'll give you something of a break in all of this. Prosecutors themselves had argued in some court filings, which they can do prior to the sentencing itself, for a prison term of 11 months. And that then followed by a term about 3 years of supervised release, you may refer to as probation. And while all of that, again, is a part of the record, the judge has the capacity, as we know in all of these cases, to either accept or reject, in whole or in part, the recommendations made by the prosecutors who are appearing before him or her. One more of the more than 1,000, we're coming up on 1,100 people, been charged with crimes, all of them stemming from the Capitol riot. And that investigation continues. And that's the deterrent portion of this. Anyone looking at Mr. Giberson and saying, gee, that's the kind of thing that I may want to consider in the future, here's the message. Giberson goes to federal prison, admittedly just for 2 months, but 2 months in a federal prison is significant. He is now a convicted felon with all the things that come along with that, and he is going to be supervised by a U.S. probation officer for a term of years as well. More than 400 people have been charged with assaulting or impeding law enforcement authorities as a part of what happened on January 6th. Those cases continue to be charged on a regular basis every single week in the U.S. District Court of the District of Columbia. They continue to be the subjects of hearings, pretrial hearings, many of them, most of them pleading out, not all of them. We've talked about some of those folks have gone to trial already, including some of those mid-level supervisors, the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, those folks who are getting the most significant terms of prison of all of these defendants. All of this to send the message to America that attacking the Capitol, trying to do exactly what Mr. Giberson did and what many, many other people did that day, at least 1,100, probably more than that, did on that day, as again, not only in violation of federal law that will land you in the federal court and land you in federal prison, however long that may be, whether that is 2 months or 18 years, more than that, whatever the sentence, all of that to send the message that we needed to stop you from doing this in the future, to send the message, may have gotten Mr. Giberson's attention because of the things that he said in court. We don't know. Some of these defendants have also gone out afterwards, right after the hearings, and once again professed their allegiance to the cause on that day. Some of them have done that, sometimes giving pause to the sentencing judges and having follow-up hearings about those kinds of things. Let's assume Mr. Giberson himself understands that what he did, his message more generally in the capacity of defendant here is to deter others. Not that there should ever be another riot, another attack on our U.S. Capitol, just as significant as the physical attack, the attempt to stop the counting of one of our most sacred processes in American government, the selecting of a president of the United States of America, the counting the votes in the well of the Congress that day. It is insurrection, yes. It is interference, yes. It is undermining the basic trappings of how we do elections in America. And it was based upon that the special counsel Jack Smith has also charged Donald John Trump with 4 violations of felonies in a separate case also pending there in the Federal District Court in Washington, D.C. That case pending in front of Tanya Chutkan. We're going to talk about her, some things that she did this past week as well. And then we're also going to talk in their second hour about this major civil case also involving the Trumps. Stay with us for that discussion coming up in the second hour here on Morning Cannolis.
I hope you don't mind. I hope you don't mind that I put down in words how wonderful life is while you're in the world.
From Liney Lodge and Carson Park, the entire Chippewa Valley is tapping in to the station talking about your hometown and all of Wisconsin. 93.5, The Tap. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
The Todd Almost Show.
I had tweeted out after the second game of the year, a hot take. I said, by the end of the year, we will see Braden Locke as the starting quarterback of the Wisconsin Badgers. Now, Mr. Mordecai broke his hand. And by golly, not the way I thought it would happen, but Braden Locke has become the starting quarterback.
And another finger on the monkey's paw curls.
Where did you get that one?
The Todd Almost Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Peter King. Secretary of State Blinken is in Cyprus just hours after meeting with a Palestinian leader on the West Bank. Here's the BBC's Lee Stusset.
The spokesperson for the Palestinian president said Mr. Abbas told Mr. Blinken there must be an immediate ceasefire and more humanitarian.